Back here with you Tuesday, April 27th, 2021 on Connecticut Today. In the 4 o'clock hour, a return visit from one of our go-to guys, Dr. Gary Rose, chair of the government department at Sacred Heart University in Fairfield. 5 o'clock hour, we also welcomed back Dr. Lorenzo Boyd, an expert in urban policing, chief diversity officer of the University of New Haven, to talk about trends in urban policing and, of course, what has happened in the wake of the verdict in the Derek Chauvin trial in Minneapolis. And at 5:40, Republican State Senator Eric Berthel joined us while a protest was going on all day at the state capitol against a bill that would get rid of the religious exemption for mandatory vaccines in Connecticut. And earlier in the show, I picked a rather unique way to expose and express my frustration currently with the offensive struggles of the New York Yankees. By the way, the last little gap, we had a little silence there before the last break. That was my fault. It was brought to you, though, by the Bridgeport Public Library. Well, you know, it's a little trick in radio. That silence, sponsored by, no, I gave Eric the wrong signal, so it's not his fault. I was, you know what I was doing? My Gary Sanchez imitation. When he can't get together with the guy throwing him the pitches. What did the Yankees have, 4 hits last night or something like that? Oh, my God. They just can't the pitching. And then, I mean, a poor kid didn't do that bad. Davey Garcia gets sent down again. Oh, my Lord.
Ball game over. Yankees win.
No.
Yankees win.
No, they don't. We can't score any runs, da 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 da, because Giancarlo strikes out all the time when the bases are low. Because they're the New York Yankees. We can't get more than 5 hits, the Yankees. Clint Frazier's over the year, Yankees. Wake me when it's over. All right, that's it. Oh, man, seriously, start the same 5 guys in a rotation, seriously, and make the same lineup. Guys and gals, no, honestly, when you and I were growing up with baseball, didn't the Yankees, the Mets, the Red Sox, the Dodgers, the Cubs, they had the same lineup every freaking night. Mickey Rivers led off of the Yankees. Reggie Jackson hit cleanup. Lou Piniella batted third, I think, because he was the best hitter. I mean, Willie Randolph batted second. Put the same lineup out there. Well, you know, the algorithm shows. Oh, stop that! Put the same 9 guys out there for a week. Well, you know, the third time through the lineup, the averages go, oh! It's unwatchable. It's unlistenable. Sometimes. Oh, my God. Put the same 9 guys out there. Start the same 5 pitchers. Bring the same guys in from the bullpen and let it cook, please. All right. I feel better now. Once again, with one of our go-to folks. Every so often, about once a month or so, we like to invite back the guy who knows politics up and down, in and out, left and right in the state and in the nation, around the country, Dr. Gary Rose, chair of the government department at Sacred Heart University in Fairfield. Gary, how are you?
Hi, Paul. Good to hear from you.
Good to hear from you, sir. Mutual here. Gary, I was just watching Mr. Biden here on the monitor deliver some of his CDC COVID news. Gary, I think that he is still benefiting, as I told a caller the other day, from not being Trump. And I think they're still riding that wave for a while.
Yeah, that's true. His public approval ratings are over half.
Yeah.
Which certainly is higher than the former president's, which never actually exceeded 50%. But at the same time, you know, so much of those approval ratings, I do have to say, in all honesty, have something to do certainly with the policies of, mm-hmm. of, of our former president, particularly with respect to the vaccine. So he is actually the beneficiary of some of the developments that occurred under the Trump administration.
It seems that, yeah, Gary, he's. I mean, their policy, much to the criticism of others, you know, kind of getting buffeted on things like immigration. We'll get to that in a moment. But it seems to be that their first declaration at every one of Jen Psaki's news conferences and anything the White House says is how good we're doing against the pandemic.
Yeah, that's really the key. And it is true that in the last election, the pandemic was the number one concern of the majority of voters. And right now it is true that the vaccinations are being administered, and a lot of people don't even need appointments anymore. And it does seem as if, you know, the pandemic, at least, you know, generally speaking, is getting under control. So because the pandemic was the number one concern, and because it does seem to have turned the corner somewhat, I would say that the president is certainly benefiting from that development. But that's right now, and who knows if there's going to be another spike in the pandemic. And there is talk, of course, about, you know, another strain of virus possibly emerging. But right now, you're right. He does seem to be a crisis manager in the view of a good number of voters as it relates to the pandemic.
We'll come back, Gary, and talk about the other thing on the polar opposite end of his approval, and that is the situation of the border and immigration. Gary, hang on. Dr. Gary Rose, chair of the government department, Sacred Heart University. We'll come back and we'll talk about how damaging is it beyond the numbers here for the young administration here to see what's going on at the border. Traffic and weather together right here on WICC. Back for a few more minutes with Dr. Gary Rose. He's chair of the government department at Sacred Heart University in Fairfield, as we have Gary on about once a month or so, one of our go-to guys, talking politics, local and national. We'll get to some Connecticut issues in just a moment. Gary, there was a big detailed story in the Washington Post yesterday delving into what's going on at the border, really from a political point of view, not from a mechanical point of view there with the Border Patrol and everything. But the crux of the story was essentially, Gary, that the incoming Biden team, they were warned that unless you have a plan that you can implement rather quickly, this has all the potential to become a political train wreck, which at least up until now it has.
Yeah, I know that the latest set of polling data does suggest that the American people see immigration as an important issue, but not the most important issue, but nevertheless a very important issue. And the president is getting very, very low marks, actually, on that. And quite frankly, you know, it is true that the Biden administration, particularly with his welcoming, you know, I don't want to say welcoming address, but with at least the statements he made about welcoming people, should have realized what was going to happen down there. And we do know it's going to get even worse as the weather gets warmer. They are anticipating possibly 1 million people, you know, coming across that border. And so you have to wonder what impact that's going to have on the congressional elections in 2022 and whether or not immigration is going to rise to the level of, say, the pandemic in terms of, you know, a priority issue in the eyes of the voters. Right now it's not, but it does seem to be climbing up, you know, the polls somewhat. And as you say, it could be a political train wreck if, in fact, the president doesn't get control of this. And quite honestly, there doesn't seem to be, at least from my perspective, I don't really see a real defined plan on the part of the Biden administration to deal with this. I know that Vice President Harris has been put in charge of the border situation, but there she's talking about working with some of the Central American countries, you know, to try to deal with the issue. But again, there doesn't seem to be any real action on the part of this administration, and it's really quite puzzling.
Yeah, Gary, I always say, and before we get to state issues here, finally on immigration, I always say I find it amazing with Democrats and even some Republicans who we have to say like the cheap off-the-books labor, you know, who cozy up to the, sure, you know, the Chamber of Commerce people and stuff like that. So few of the political class agree with so many, Gary, voters, really on both sides of the aisle. These voters want them to say, can you please just say enough? We love the world. We know everybody would come here. But what is wrong with a country saying enough? Let's work this out. Sorry, you can't come in here.
Yeah, well, you know, a country that does not have secure borders ceases to be a country. And so it is actually amazing. And I know that it's easy to pin this on the president, and he should be, of course, the one who is primarily held responsible for it. Yet at the same time, you know, Congress, too, is supposed to be involved in immigration policy. And there, too, as you note, Paul, you accurately note, both Democrats and Republicans, the Republicans are raising a lot of issues. The Democrats seem to be defending the president. But yet there doesn't seem to be any real concerted action either from the legislative branch or the executive branch on this issue. And I agree completely with you that it is heading towards and it is a crisis right now, but it's going to be catastrophic if there isn't action taken.
Dr. Gary Rose, chair of the government department, Sacred Heart University, is with us. Turning to our backyard here, Gary, in Connecticut. Boy, I got to tell you, Ned Lamont may have a D next to his name as a Democrat, but John Fonfara, Democratic State Senator Gary from Hartford the other day, he was quoted as saying the governor should start acting like a Democrat, to which I read that and I said, whoa. And this all the blowback from a lot of the left-leaning part of his party. Gary, when the governor says, no, I do not want to raise taxes. He's a rich white guy from a part of the state, Gary, with a lot of, let's face it, a lot of rich white guys. And the governor is upsetting a good amount of his caucus.
Yeah, the governor is actually governing as more of a centrist, which in some respects was not too surprising given his background and his positions on some other issues as well. And there is a very strong progressive caucus up there at the state capitol, which I know is increasingly getting, you know, disillusioned with his position, particularly on the issue that you just mentioned. He's not going to, you know, support more taxation. And apparently what we're finding here is that the Democratic Party is not as monolithic as people were thinking. And I would say that that's probably more true for the Republicans. But within the Democratic Party, it is a pretty big tent. And you are finding, you know, progressives versus moderates right here in the Constitution state. And it's kind of a good thing to see because in some other states and even nationally, there does seem to be more of a monolithic, you know, drift of the Democrats. But here in Connecticut, we have a governor who is actually at odds with a portion of his party. And I think it's actually healthy for parties to be that way.
Absolutely. And on a final issue, Gary, we can talk about that vis-a-vis the push to legalize marijuana. I mean, the governor keeps saying it's going to happen, it's going to happen, it's going to happen. Yet that progressive caucus, they're balking at the 55% figure the governor is saying to redirect funds into some of these equity areas, if you will.
Yeah.
And they're pushing something like 70%. So, again, you know, legal weed for whatever somebody values it for. But, you know, legal weed is coming in New York. It's already in Jersey. It's in Massachusetts. It's coming in Rhode Island. And I was talking to a couple of legislators, Gary, on both sides of the aisle. And they both said the same thing to me. I said, what are the chances? They said 50-50 at best right now.
Mm-hmm. 50-50, yeah. And, you know, if the revenue, if it is raised there too, you will see conflicts over where this revenue should be directed. And we are witnessing also, you know, obviously some conflicts already emerging about where the governor is going to be directing some of the COVID relief money. So, on these issues, you're absolutely right. How to spend the money on the marijuana issue, everything that you are seeing, again, a very interesting dynamic unfolding here before our very eyes within the Democratic Party. And it's, again, come back to my point that it's kind of interesting to see this, because that's the way parties are supposed to be. They're supposed to be conflict internally and also across the aisle. And we're witnessing here in Connecticut.
Yeah. Gary, as always, great stuff. Thank you, Dr. Gary Rose, chair of the Government Department, Sacred Heart University in Fairfield. Gary, thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay, Paul. All right.
Appreciate it, as always. Dr. Gary Rose, one of the best political minds in the state. We had this gentleman on last year, right after the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis. So I wanted to have him back on again now that the trial is over, justice served, most people would say, and now we are still, though, involved in some of these other police shootings. To get his view as to what's going on, he's VP for Diversity and Inclusion and the Chief Diversity Officer at the University of New Haven, a nationally recognized leader in police community relations, former law enforcement officer himself. Dr. Lorenzo Boyd is back with us. Dr. Boyd, Paul here once again. How are you?
Hey, Paul, thank you for having me. I'm doing well, sir. How are you?
I'm good. I get up in the morning, so that's a good day right there. The rest of it is all gravy.
That's a good start.
The rest of it is all gravy. First of all, Dr. Boyd, your thoughts on the conclusion of at least the Derek Chauvin part of the George Floyd proceedings. I know the other officers have to be tried, but what's your reaction so far?
I think the finding of guilt on all three charges for Derek Chauvin is the best possible outcome for the police, because the vast majority of police officers that I talk to are God-fearing, hardworking people that are really trying to make a difference, and knuckleheads like Chauvin make their job really, really hard. So the fact that there's a level of accountability is going to make their job easier, particularly the officers that are now trying to include the healing and move forward and start to, help the community heal.
We have news, Dr. Boyd, over the past couple of days of now the federal government, I guess, is going to look closer at these things. The Louisville Police Department's going to be looked at as far as the Breonna Taylor case is concerned. You know, Dr. Boyd, I'm very pro-police, and I'm all for this. I think if nothing more than to show that you can have maybe these investigations that aren't tainted by local biases, I don't mind when the feds want to come in and take a look at these. What are your thoughts on that?
I'm also a proponent of doing that, because if you think about it, everybody in their job has some level of oversight. The police tend to have less oversight than most other people. Doctors, dentists, teachers, everyone has people coming in and checking them and making sure they're doing what they're supposed to do. And having federal oversight doesn't mean you've done anything wrong. It's kind of like having a body cam, because the body cameras or the dash cams will actually help prove that the police are doing right things as well. So having the feds coming in looking at your department, I think, is a good thing.
Let's look at a couple of cases now, Dr. Boyd, that are really at the top of the news. First of all, that tragic case in Ohio, where that officer comes on the scene and he chooses to use deadly force there when he sees a girl who has a knife raised. And I've seen a lot of high-profile folks, including Dr. Boyd, Congresswoman Val Demings of Florida, African-American, of course, former police chief, former officer. She was asked about it Sunday, and she said while it was tragic, it was probably the officer's training that allowed him to do that. What are your thoughts on that case?
I think that, it was probably the officer's training, but a lot of people in the community aren't looking just at that. If you look at things in a vacuum, just one case at a time, it's easy to kind of, come to these conclusions. But if you look at the totality of the things that are going on, when there is a young white kid with a long gun that shot and killed two people, wave at the police, they wave at him, and they allow him to walk away. But somebody like this is shot and killed. It's the disparate enforcement that people are upset about. It's not one is necessarily bad, the other one is good. It's why are these things so very different that certain people with guns are allowed to walk away, but other people with no guns are not.
What are your gut feeling on that, Dr. Boyd? Why is it the individual officer? Is it how he or she is trained? Is it a hair trigger response, no pun intended, especially when we look at what happened with Dante Wright? I mean, why is this such a variable thing, do you think?
I don't think it's necessarily individual officers. I think it's the way police officers are trained in this country in general. And if you put really good people into a situation with training that's less than optimal, then bad things happen. If you look at it, we haven't changed the way we train the police in nearly 110 years. When we ushered in the professionalism era, we still trained the police. It's us versus them. And we keep saying that this call could be your last call, or this traffic stop could be your last traffic stop. When if you look at the numbers, fewer police officers are killed in the line of duty feloniously. Now you'd have to go back to the Nixon administration to find a higher, wow. A lower number of officers killed.
Wow. Dr. Boyd, we also have this case in North Carolina. Again, I don't want to prejudge anything. I know you don't want to either, but boy, I tell you, this case in North Carolina does not look good. A gentleman shot in the head. Yes, he had a criminal record. That doesn't matter in this situation. They were trying to serve a warrant. Boy, that case doesn't look good. Dr. Boyd, looking at a case like that and the Dante Wright case where this officer made a tragic mistake, although it has been made before, should some of these officers undergo training when it, I don't know, when something gets to a certain point of escalation, do they back off? Do they take a breath? Do they just put out a, you know, a BOLO warning and say, okay, we're going to get you anyway? I mean, how do we limit these accidents from happening?
Paul, that's an excellent question. Thank you for asking that question, because one of the points that I was making, when you were serving a warrant for someone, you know who they are, you know what they're driving, you've got the license plate, you know where they hang out, you have their address, you have all this information about them. If they drove away, using deadly force when people are leaving may not be the first thing that you do. I mean, we can always get them. We know where folks are. And it's not like this person was a mass murderer or something. This guy was a drug dealer. So, and again, it's also pretty telling that there are now 10 deputies off the street, 10. Some of them resigned. Some of them pulled off the street. That tells me that whatever happened, the sheriff decided we needed to pull these people out of the community. So it's going to be interesting to see. And I don't have an opinion on if it was right or wrong. I just know the way it looked, the fact that the sheriff pulled all these folks off, you know, there's something there.
Nationally, you know, we hear the stats, Dr. Boyd, about, yes, this happens and it's tragic and this turns into a lot of news porn, if it were, you know, on both sides with all the 24-hour news cycle. Are we in danger, Dr. Boyd, of really losing the realization here that although these horrible things happen because we're human beings, millions and millions of police encounters with people go okay every year?
We don't lose that at all, because the vast majority of the encounters with the police are actually nonviolent and happen without real incident. So the fact that force is escalated is something we need to take a look at. And if you look at the final report on 21st century policing, pillar number 6 is officer safety and wellness. And we need to pay attention to the officer wellness portion, because there's a lot of folks that are overworked. The officers, some of them are going through PTSD, and we need to take a look at that, because for the fourth year in a row, officer suicide has outpaced officer homicide. So there's a lot of officers that are on edge. We have to normalize being able to ask for help. We have to protect those that protect us and give them a release valve so things like this won't happen on the street.
And yet, finally, Doctor, you see in some of these big cities like New York and other cities, mass retirements. Cops are saying, that's it. You know, I've had it. Is this going to bode not well, do you think, for recruitment efforts or not?
No, I think it's actually good, because we want officers to get out a little bit earlier, because the general life expectancy of people in policing is you know, in the early 60s when the general population is in the late 70s, if some of these officers get out a little early and move away from the stress, they can enjoy some of their lives. They can enjoy their kids and their grandkids. So having officers jump out, I think it's a travesty that a lot of the unions are making officers stay into 30 or 32 years to collect full retirement. If we let them retire a little bit earlier with a little more money, they can get out. They'll be safer. Some of the younger folks are getting into some of these things. You know, we wouldn't lose so many officers.
Always good to hear from Dr. Lorenzo Boyd, VP for Diversity and Inclusion and the Chief Diversity Officer at the University of New Haven. Dr. Boyd, good to hear from you. Take care, and we'll talk down the road.
Thanks for talking, Paul. Have a great day.
Appreciate it. Dr. Lorenzo Boyd, VP for Diversity and Inclusion, Chief Diversity Officer. He's a former law enforcement officer himself, nationally recognized leader in police community relations, and an authority on urban policing, diversity issues in criminal justice, race and crime, and criminal justice systems. All right. Now, that's interesting. He thought that, you know, this worried wave of police retirements is actually good. He thinks 25 years or so, that's enough on a force. That having guys go 30, 32 years, that might not be a good thing. Let's get an update from the state capitol. A lot of contentious debate today, and also a protest, 3,000 or 4,000 people showing up outside the capitol regarding a bill that, if it passes in the Senate, will likely be signed by Governor Ned Lamont, to get rid of the vaccine exemption, the so-called religious exemption in the state. Republican State Senator Eric Berthel is with us for a quick update. Eric, hi. Paul Pacelli, how are you, sir?
Hey, Paul. Good to hear your voice again. It's been a while since we last spoke.
Yes.
We have. I think you framed it really well. Mm-hmm. Coming into our conversation, we have. All day we've seen outside a couple of thousand protesters, if you will, or peaceful protesters expressing their discontent with this this really awful piece of legislation that is before the legislature. My colleagues and I on the Republican side of the building here, so to speak, have all spoken, and we're now at a point in time where we are running amendments on the bill. But The bill, Paul, really comes down to this. Religious freedom is guaranteed, by the Constitution. You know, it's part of what our forefathers fought for our independence. It's part of what our nation is built on. You know, I made the comment on the floor of the Senate earlier that, you know, we believe so much in religious freedom and protecting that. That it's on our currency, you know, in God we trust, right? You know, what else do we have to say in terms of upholding our religious beliefs and everything we hold so near and dear? And this bill is a serious infringement on freedom. I think it would set a terrible precedent for this legislature to think that it can do this and believe that it's okay to do it.
What do you say, Eric, what do you say to the people who say, oh, listen, come on, other states have done this, and to have this so-called religious exemption only plays into the hands, Eric, of anti-vaxxers? What do you say to those people?
No, I don't think this has to do with anti-vaxxers, and there's been some pretty unfortunate comments that have been made regarding that from our colleagues on the left, saying that anti-vaxxers are all conspiracy theorists and everything else. This religious taking away the exemption for religious, you know, your religious beliefs is it chews at the heart of what we believe in terms of freedom. This is not an anti-vax thing. People who don't want to vaccinate because they have a religious reason to do so, that's the reason why. It's not because they don't necessarily believe in vaccines or what have you. And Paul, I can tell you that the thousands of people who are out on this lawn, this beautiful north lawn of this beautiful building here in Hartford, they're not all I would venture to say that a lot of them are fully vaccinated, and their children are fully vaccinated. They're here fighting for protecting freedom. And that's what this comes down to. And the reality is that this bill, and I spoke to this, and some of my other colleagues spoke to this. this bill ends up in the high court, in the Connecticut Supreme Court, inevitably, and gets overturned. It gets overturned.
Really?
The 14th Amendment.
So? You think so?
Yeah, I do. The 14th Amendment of the Constitution guarantees, it doesn't really talk anything about education, but this is the one that talks about due process and incorporation and equality. It's the Brown versus Board of Ed case from 1954. That promise that we couldn't segregate our schools. We had to treat all students equally. We had to provide access for everyone. There have been many cases since then that have adjusted the laws and showed us that we have to make appropriate accommodations for people. And this bill does not do this. It takes away education ultimately because someone wants to claim a religious exemption. That's just wrong. It's fundamentally wrong.
Eric, finally, in the House, I know it passed pretty easily. There were some people who crossed both ways. There were some Republicans who voted with Democrats, Democrats who voted for Republicans. Do you expect a party line vote in your chamber, or might there be a Senate member from either side crossing over?
I think that we will see every Republican vote against this bill, and we may see a few Democrats. We already listened to Senator Bradley, who's from Bridgeport. You know, a large part of your audience, right, is in that neck of the woods. Mm-hmm. We saw Senator Austin, who represents a Democrat from way out in eastern Connecticut, who said she will not support the bill. So I think all the Republicans stay together, and I actually think the opposite will occur. That we'll see some Democrats that will break with the Republicans on this. They understand it. This is, first of all, Paul, real quickly.
Sure.
Probably a longer conversation for another day.
Mm-hmm.
The big thing that we're all questioning is why are we doing this right now?
It's the timing.
With everything else going on. Why is this such a priority?
You know, Eric, I've been told by people in your caucus in the House and Senate and other people around the state that observe politics, there is a thought that because, Eric, there are not face-to-face public hearings this year because of the pandemic and we're doing everything on Zoom, that this bill was brought up again and will likely pass again with people not having to face down people face-to-face. Do you think there's any validity to that?
Well, it's a good question. It's a good question. And I think that's part of the challenge for right now for everything we're doing, right? Because the building has been shut down, even though we're opening up Connecticut, right? Where we're going to see a list of restrictions going forward. You know, it's very easy when they've changed the rules and we've deployed technology here to allow a legislator to not be even seen. Right. Let alone to here in the building on a day when we're in session. You know, normally, in non-COVID times, we're in the chamber, we're in and out, we're in and out of our caucus room. But we're all pretty visible. Right. This whole situation has created, in large part what you just described. You don't have to face the music, so to speak. You don't have to stand. And the whole thing with public hearings that were all done by Zoom, they're still being done by Zoom. You don't get to see the emotion. You don't get to see the body language.
Oh, sure. No, I get it. State Senator Eric Berthel. Eric, good to talk to you again, and we'll keep
Thanks,
in touch
Paul.
On this, and we'll talk down the road. Eric, thank you. Take care.
Thank you.
All right. There you go. Republican State Senator Eric Berthel.